That was Joy Division, and this is Richard Roth with The Passage on WGXC. My guest this month is Eric Ryan, who has a show called 360 Moons at BCB Art in Hudson this month, consisting of work created over the past 30 years in photography, sculpture, and wire drawings. Eric is one of those artists who can speak in some detail about his work, so I will let him speak for himself.
So we're ready to go. This is Richard Roth with The Passage on WGXC, and I'm here at BCB Art on Warren Street with the artist Eric Ryan, who is currently installing a show. Eric, welcome to the radio.
Well, thank you, Richard. It's very nice to be here with you.
Now, how long have you been affiliated with Bruce?
I believe it goes back to 2006. A boyfriend of mine at the time and I were contemplating other places to have studios besides around the Manhattan, New York area where I live. The path took us to Bruce and we hit it off quite immediately.
And you had lived in the Hudson Valley also.
Yeah, I actually grew up in New Paltz, New York. My family moved there when I was getting ready to start the fifth grade. We had lived in Columbia, South Carolina, where my father taught art education at the university. And he'd picked out a house when he visited here up on Lyons Road, right by the Lake Minnewaska and Mohonk Trust land. So the house at the end of Lyons Road actually is the end of the road. And then back beyond the road, there's this old trail, which actually once had farmland back there many, many, many years ago. So I spent a lot of my childhood just wandering the woods with my dog, Daisy.
Now, did your father come up to be a teacher at New Paltz?
He came up to be a teacher at teaching again art education at State University of New Paltz. My sister and I grew up from a very, very young age in the ceramic and art department studios of the universities where he taught. And so art making has been like breathing air and drinking water since I was a kid. Ceramics, printmaking, I said ceramic studios because that was primarily my father's medium of making these very organic vessels using raku and Japanese techniques. And they very often referenced also abstract expressionism. But he also painted and did printmaking. So my sister and I would make the Christmas cards and doing linoleum block prints and it was a really very rich environment because the children of the other professors, like my sister and I, were not segregated from the parents, so we were very much an integral part of this I was born in 1961, so it was very much part of the 60s on the college campuses.
And New Paltz was kind of in the thick of it, I think.
It was, even then. My father and I, and my sister actually would join my dad into... At the time that this happened, it was actually, we lived in State College, Pennsylvania. We actually moved every 2 years. But we would go out into the streams and the woods, and we would often join my father when he would photograph his ceramics in the woods and in stream beds. So art and nature really has been an integral part of my life since I was growing up. You know, entered a lot of the work that I did myself, certainly even now.
And you decided to go to the School of Visual Arts.
When I was getting ready to choose, schools that I would hope to go to, my high school teacher friend, Sutherland, had found out that the School of Visual Arts was actually offering scholarships to 12 graduating seniors each year at that time. And I applied and actually got one of them. So for me, moving to New York City probably was an inevitable, thing to happen anyway. But getting this scholarship, it's actually a full scholarship at that time, was a real gift to be able to enter going to school there.
I suppose you've gone to the city many times with your parents.
The first exhibition that I saw was a show of Louise Nevelson that my father and a man that he was friends with at the University of South Carolina took me to. It was at the Pace Gallery, and the upstairs room was her works of art in black, and downstairs was white, and you would go down the spiral staircase. It was so, I'd gone to galleries and museums with my parents, growing up, but that experience still has this really strong impression on me. And actually, last year I was included in an exhibition, and it was called Tiny Pictures at this gallery called Pavel Zubok that I have a relationship with. And in Tiny Pictures, it was like a museum show of a historical reference, because there was a little pendant by Louise Nevelson. And then there was also my piece, which was titled The Immoralist, after Jean Genet book, was hanging next to a piece by Hannah Wilke. And Hannah Wilke was my foundation sculpture teacher at School of Visual Arts back in 1980. So to have these different associations of these artists that had been, you know, influential and who I still admire was really quite an amazing gift to me.
In those days, when you were at school, what did you do in terms of art? What kind of?
You know, I had moved to New York, actually graduated high school half a year early, and I had become friends with this man Kermit Love. He created Big Bird for Sesame Street, and he had a house really quite close to New Paltz that he would commute to the city from. And he had heard about my puppets actually while I was still in high school, and called me up one day, and he said that he had heard that I had made interesting puppets. Do you? And I loaded up my puppets in a suitcase, and my father dropped me down in New Paltz to meet Kermit. And it started this relationship of weekend visits with Kermit, going to his house and him, you know, introducing me to, you know, broaden my world by not only showing me designs that he had done for George Balanchine and for other designers, but also fashion design that were very sculptural, like Balenciaga and designers like that. And then when I was getting ready to enter my last year, my senior year in high school, I realized that I had enough credits to graduate early, just as Kermit offered to have me come and work on the Picasso retrospective with him, remaking Picasso's Parade figures for the Picasso retrospective at the time. So this meeting with Kermit intersected my starting at School of Visual Arts, and I ended up living in the East Village. You know, the experience of School of Visual Arts and being absorbed into the East Village art movement happened simultaneously, so it was all kind of merged together.
Now, did you show it on East Village Gallery?
Well, the puppets were shown in a lingerie store called Anelra, and they were in a, I guess maybe that was technically my first public showing in New York City. It was in a lingerie store in the East Village, because I had a friend, Douglas Ferguson, that was doing painting on leather, and he had introduced me to, you know, his friends. My first gallery experience was a gallery called Civilian Warfare, and I've been doing wearable constructions at the time, things that were made of collections of, you know, old jewelry and chain and things that had a certain kind of history to them, showing Civilian Warfare.
I actually met Kermit here in Hudson.
Did you really?
He was friends with Edith Bell Geddes.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
So he came to visit her.
So, you know what a character he was. Yeah, he actually looked quite much like an old world Santa Claus, because of his big, long white beard. Not quite as kept as your distinguished one.
You've done work in various media all along, it seems.
I have. Since I was a child, somehow my artwork has always referenced personal experiences that I've gone through in some way, generally, initially, unconsciously, even things that I would be going through emotionally or have been affected by, and then the way of making the work. That my association to creating is very much as you're channeling and communicating with the world, and even the physical and spiritual world at large, and that the creative process is a way of us being vessels that this energy comes through, which has really been a real gift for me throughout my life. And then the mediums that I work with, whether it be wire or as a drawing element, or constructing objects, you know, with found materials, which are very much a part of my interest, or taking a, like in the show here at BCB Art, it's centered around a lot of self-portraits that are silver gelatin prints and their realization, but their, you know, moments in time and space and rooms, often a dialogue with myself, particularly around my identity, around both spiritually and even sexually, and dealing with intimacy around the fact that I'm HIV positive and actually tested positive when I was 27 in 1987. And now that it's 2017, you know, that I've been through a real range of what the AIDS crisis has brought.
And it's now 30 years.
It's 30 years. It's actually August was my 30th anniversary, if you will, of testing positive. That's actually where the title for the show comes from, which is 360 moons, because there are 360 new moons in 30 years. It's a title that was really gifted to me by a really close friend of mine who is also a long-term survivor, Chris Scaleros. Titling the show can come relatively easily. It also can be particularly challenging, and this one was that for me. This is selected works from that 30-year period, from sculptural constructions which are very much like skeletal kinds of, more than skeletal structures, but they are built with a wire of different alloys, from steel to gold, silver, and gold filled rather and silver. The sculpture here actually are relatively figurative. There's two of them, and so they reference the figure in a more abstract kind of way. One is called Butterfly Girl. It's an abbreviated title that I came up with. Her original title was The Girl Down Old Van Leeuwen Road, because Old Van Leeuwen Road is the name of that trail that goes back past the house that I grew up with in Mohonk Trust. Back behind that trail, there's this old reforested land, and now it's practically obliterated, but when I was growing up, you could see real traces of the people that lived there, the well that they drew water from, and stone walls, and it was really, you know, a sacred, kind of secret place that I would go to as a child or as a youth. So The Girl Down Old Van Leeuwen Road to me is this expression of a young woman that may have lived there at once. And like a lot of my work deals with spirituality and metaphysical concerns, this butterfly girl is expressive of that to me. Like what spirit would be left behind once this young woman had passed and gone on? There's a little butterfly brooch in her sternum, which the title comes from. And then actually, looking at her now with you, you know, it's like she's been made out of vines and twigs against the wall there. The way the light reflects on her, the shadows add another kind of ethereal dimension. Actually, now thinking of it, I'm reminded that I actually started working with wire in Kermit Love's shop, because following the Picasso retrospective project, the next project was to work on a ballet with Kermit, L'Enfant de la Sortilège, The Magical Child, which was George Balanchine project. And one of my tasks was to make butterfly puppets. And I draw the outlines of butterfly wings and then trace them with wire and stretch silk chiffon over them with mastering the hot glue gun. That linear quality has continued as this way of drawing, even though she's the butterfly girl is three-dimensional, I really can see her actually as a drawing as well.
Among the worst of yours I've seen, this is unusual in using several types of wire.
The figurative sculptures actually often do that. And you know, everything from rusty wire that I find on the street to gold-filled wire and silver. And there's little threads in her that look like horse hair or human hair. It's actually, it's nylon thread, but that tying them rather than soldering them with this blue gives this corporal kind of experience to the work. This other piece, which is called Bartley's Boxers, it's titled after my friend Bartley Cooper, who died through complications of AIDS in the early 90s. Bartley was when he was a young man, was a go-go boy at a place called the Gaiety in Times Square. This rendition of a boxer that Bartley might have worn goes back more towards associations of another time period, and the boxers are accentuated with drawer pulls where the embroidery around the pockets of the boxers might be, or a handle is where kind of forms this codpiece kind of ornamentation on his groin. There's some kind of old ornamental plate around where the anal opening would be in the box of the boxers. A lot of the work has real sexual overtones. And
now, also with Wire, of course, you've done the leaves. By this time, you've done many, many leaves, right?
Hundreds of leaves,
which
actually
are memorials to specific persons.
They are, actually. I started the piece, which is called Leaves. The leaves actually came at a very pivotal moment in my life. I'd become quite rapidly transformed in 1996 through the protease inhibitors, these AIDS medications that came out at that time. And prior to that, I was really very, very ill. And these medications that came out in 1996 not only saved my life, but many, many other people. I was at the McDowell Colony, the Sardis Colony in New Hampshire. And before I had applied to McDowell, I actually wouldn't have been able to go because I was so ill. By 1995, having gone through various scenarios, my T cells were down to 4, and I weighed 127 pounds. And my normal weight is about 170. I'm 5'11 and a half. And I also had candida systemically into my bone marrow, which was causing other implications. And my platelets, I had very few platelets, so my doctor cautioned me not to go out of the house because if I fell, I could hemorrhage, though I would still go out.
You were basically at that store.
I was. I mean, in the way I think and hold health and in all of its complexities, including one's relationship to spirit, however one might think of that, I tend to avoid terms like at death's door because I feel like one never knows why one survives, but in actuality, that's probably very much the case. I mean, in fact, a lot of the images in my photography, these self-portraits, I'm very often placed in doorways, either open or through can be seen through a screen door. So there are definitely references to doorways, and one of the photographs is called Threshold. Another one is called Ladder because there's a ladder next to this door. So it's very actually not, though I shy away from it, there's metaphoric relationships within my work.
How do you actually do them? You pose and then put the camera on a timer?
Yeah, I do actually. The first self-portrait was done in 1992. I sat on a bench. It's called Seated, and I'm seated on a bench, and I'm nude, feet folded. It's a very straightforward photograph of me, this young man, first going through this experience with a tripod and a timer. And I had a number, I feel really blessed that I have a number of young friends in my life through the AIDS activists and arts communities that I'm part of in New York. And in contextualizing what called me to make these photographs, in really thinking about them and how I would write about them, I had these two young friends of mine who I'm in ongoing conversations with really helped me to look and see what motivated me in 1992 to start taking these photographs, unknowing that, 10 years later, they would actually depict this experience, this arcing experience before the protease inhibitors have breached into the post-protease inhibitor evolution of the AIDS epidemic. The photographs actually in this room go in the exhibition here at Warren Street go from 1992 to 1999. And the 1999 photograph is called Communion with Oak, also referencing this leaves piece. And I'm holding a cutout, a white piece of paper, and cutout is an oak leaf. So you see my skin through that cutout. And I'm holding this piece, which shows my body in quite a tender moment. And Communion with Oak references very much the leaves piece, which you spoke of, because it's the leaves represent, each one represents someone that I knew who died through the AIDS epidemic. And when I was at the McDowell Colony, the leaves were turning overhead as I was in reference to me having transformed into this more vital sense of health. And I felt literally the spirits of the people that I knew around me as this energy field, as if they were supporting me into going out into the world and going out into the world and reacclimating to who I become now, this more vital, actually virile incarnation of myself. And since wire is my medium and I had that, where I was in McDowell, it was natural for me to go from tracing the outlines of the leaves that I had gathered, which referenced my friends, and then trace them in wire. And I think of them very much as three-dimensional drawings and metaphoric portraits to these friends of mine.
Did the leaves come first in terms of the wire drawings?
Well, I thought of the wire sculptural three-dimensional pieces like Butterfly Girl, which had come before, and Bartley's Boxes and these other pieces. When I started photographing them for documentation, I could see the linear references and thought very much of them as this drawn piece. And even the leaves have a three-dimensional quality because as I sculpt them, I use jeweler's pliers, but I bend the shape so that they have as if one would hold their hand and motion their hand upward, or they have a three-dimensional quality to them. And then so that they also can cast shadows against the white paper that they're hooked into. It's one actually continual drawing, but I incorporate fingers so that they can puncture into the paper and hold against it.
How are they attached to the...
They're attached because as I render the leaves form, I'll incorporate extensions that go inside the leaves, like kind of like fingers. So then when I place them on the page, they puncture through. And it's actually, as I'm speaking of it, I recognize that it's actually a very ritualistic experience because I've spent sometimes a couple of days making this tribute to my friend and thinking about them and who they are and who they were to me. Sometimes actually healing unresolved concerns that we may have had in life. And then perforating the page and putting the fingers through that holds the leaf in place against the paper is quite a beautiful punctuation of that time. And a sense of honoring, not only who I had the relationship with, but the person in their more totality. At the McDowell Colony, there were originally about 86 leaves. And actually there's a photograph in the show called Kinsman, and I'm nude in front of the installation of leaves. But then since then, I've continued it, and I made a commitment that I would continue remembering people that I knew up until today. We're now it actually exceeds 250 people, because there's a piece for anyone I can remember having an association with, ranging from intimate friends to people that were artistic inspirations. I also made a commitment that this piece, I wanted to be able to go out into the world. So, and that these were like ambassadors to continue to speak about the AIDS epidemic by being presented. At this point, it's actually presented internationally. There's a piece for a tribute to Robert Mapplethorpe, who is a friend and neighbor of mine. And so there's a piece, a tribute to him now in this exhibition in London called Nature Mort at Guildhall, which is actually where the mayor of the city of London lives. And there's also a group of six of them at the American Embassy in Greece. It's actually in the ambassador's residence because there's a program called the Art and Embassy Program where artwork by Americans are placed in embassies, residents throughout the world so that the ambassador can have a dialogue with. So sometimes it's more relationships to where the ambassador might have been from, and other times it's more of a political ideology behind the work that's selected, which is the case with Lee's because it gives the ambassador an opening to, and in this case, the ambassador's wife, an opening to speak about concerns about HIV in ways that may not have occurred automatically. The leaves actually are in Greece, are in the dining room, and the ambassador and his wife wrote me a really beautiful note saying that they feel that the leaves being there at the dining table are like these are guests at dinner.
Nice.
Yeah. It's a project that I've been really devoted to since doing it. At times when it seems that this piece can overtake me in its time and space and also place that it has in my life and work, when I speak of it like in terms of these tributes to my friends, being honored guests at dinner and ambassadors to the concerns in life that we've shared, it really reinforces why I have placed this piece in my life and why it's actually a gift to me. It was really a direct response that I feel I was given in the woods of New Hampshire where the McDonald colony is, and an automatic gesture to pick up these leaves and see that, oh, this is young blonde Scott with the bright green eyes, because his leaf is not quite changed to color. And next to him is his companions, Carlos and Tim. And then it just went on from there, actually. The other colonists at McDowell initially thought that I was in love because they'd always see me beaming and smiling as I would go from place to place. And as I generally do in life, I started sharing that actually I had been through this transformational, quite profound experience with my health. And they realized that perhaps I was in love. I was in love with the cosmos.
Well, to use another cliche, you had a new lease on life.
I did, yeah, I did. And it's not a lease that doesn't have a mortgage, and other, I don't know whether that's the correct term or not, perhaps some humor is good here. But, I think that it's important that there's clarity that this new lease on life that I've been given and my contemporaries who have been on a path of survival, because many of us, that it's not always easy to navigate it, especially in a culture and political climate like ours, where it's a small world, they say, in all these different associations of people and times and spaces. That's actually has relationships to how I think about my peace leaves, actually. Because they're, being that they're more than 250, I say that because I honestly, it's a project, because there are pieces that go out into the world, it's challenging for me to keep track of things. I made a commitment as well to, if a piece is placed in outside of my studio, that I can use the original tracings of these leaves to reproduce that piece. So theoretically, the piece can continually, be intact, which is more theoretical at this point in time. But there are all these, because I, spent my adult life, a lot of it affected by being positive. The range of people that I've known ranges from, the celebrated to people that have made contributions in other kinds of ways, to people in the theater world, dance community. It also bridges the activist community of people who were really strongly involved with ACT UP and had a more direct street treading path to contributing to the AIDS crisis. I have a leaf in honor of Spencer Cox, who was very formative member of ACT UP. He actually contributed to the protease inhibitors being released more timely because of developing a study based on his own body. He died much more recently, and is really an example of how someone who's positive can be overwhelmed by the realities of actual survival. The piece in honor of Spencer was selected to be part of this exhibition, Art AIDS in America, which traveled the country, a representation of how art and AIDS intersected and not only influenced AIDS activism, but also contemporary art at large. And I wanted Spencer's leaf to be included because I thought it important that what he represented as a long-term survivor and the actual what I think of as long-term survival syndrome. There's a lot that I feel responsible to, like, not to or reference to, and I realize that it's, like, unrealistic all the time. But it's like this, because my artwork functions on different levels, hopefully, certainly aesthetically, and with what a viewer can bring and being a representation of the human experience at large, because of this HIV reference that I have, I feel a responsibility to include that. And it's somehow, at times it has more challenging than others, because I don't want to limit myself as a man, and also in terms of me being someone whose identity is informed by HIV, but that's not all I am. I also recognize through experience that HIV and AIDS have a very sharp way of hitting people. And depending on the person who is hearing it, it can stop there rather than see that there's a wealth and a range of depth within this experience that has actually helped to transform not only individual lives, but also humanity. That's very much in part with why I appreciate these young men in my life so much, that they see within my work a relationship to their history and to mine, and also these particular men who are quite expansive thinkers and poetic thinkers see that there's much more within the AIDS experience than just death and destruction, but there's light. And if one, you know, my work also relating to nature and to my wanting to enter into spaces which allow transformative thought, that there's reflective light within that experience, as in life at large. I'm quite involved with Native American traditions through the communities that I'm with as well, and that has brought a lot of resonance to how I've experienced the world, and how that spirit has a vibration in the natural world, and that we're a part of that too. And the leaves being, I mean, perhaps in my work, I mean, a most pointed way of that, and the beauty of even the way that they decay and go back into the ground and resurface and are part of, you know, the ground that we walk on. And here, Bruce Bergman, who has BCB art, he placed this leaf couple that are Jeff and Tim, who are friends of mine, who actually happened to be very involved with a bar in the East Village called the Wonder Bar. As other capacities, Jeff loved to spin records that were more, vintage, you know, classics. And but here in the gallery, Bruce, him very sensitively hanging the show, he placed Jeff and Tim next to this photograph of my back, which is very centered in a photograph called Constellation. Named Constellation because I have a lot of moles and freckles on my back, and had my first intimate encounter with a friend of mine. When I took my shirt off, he said, "Oh, it's like a constellation," uh-huh. And it's transformed my subconsciousness of what I thought were flaws in my complexion to something that was much more of the cosmos. But you would hear my back and Jeff and Tim all reference and mimic the same sort of form. So Jeff and Tim, it heightens Jeff and Tim's physicality is referencing the human anatomy. This is fun.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah. There's also, back to the butterflies as well, there's a photograph of some monarch butterflies that I call Visitation. And it actually was taken on Fire Island. You know, in the autumn, the monarchs migrate, and they pass through Fire Island. And there's this butterfly bush on the edge of one of the walkways. And I spent a couple of hours with, you know, two rows of film taking images of these monarchs. And this one image, as often in a roll of film, stands out as being the one. It's like a... To me, they're continual associations, which is really quite beautiful when you speak about work with someone else, like yourself. And so these butterflies, to me, seem like they're in a little dance, going back to this George Balanchine experience.
Uh-huh.
It's called Visitation because I wanted to have a more open title, because Fire Island is a place, particularly the pines and Cherry Grove, where I spent time acclimating to being a more vital person after the protease inhibitors came out, is a place where... you know, a lot of men went to die because going back to their experience on the Fire Island. So, and then, like myself, there are men that went to Fire Island to be part of their rebirth experience, for lack of a better term.
I had a friend who had a little garden behind his place in Cherry Grove with a small band shell kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And he'd have a string quartet come and play in the fall.
That's beautiful.
And one year, while the concert was going on, the place filled with monarch butterflies.
Oh, wow.
They were all over all the trees.
That's glorious.
And
yeah.
It was an incredible sight.
Yeah, that's glorious. So they were attracted to the music, to you,
I don't know if they heard the music
to,
or what it was,
yeah.
But there they were.
Yeah. But to me, I call it this piece Visitation because it references to me the feeling of spirits in the air on Fire Island. That are certainly there.
Now, you also do these quite elaborate constructions, I don't know what you call them. They're sort of like a sort of more elaborate Joseph Cornell box,
uh-huh.
with lots of different things in them. How long have you been doing those?
Well, I love that you mentioned Joseph Cornell, because he was certainly, like Louise Nevelson, part of my artistic heritage. I like that term. Because when I was in high school, I was introduced to Joseph Cornell. It really, his work really resonated with me. So that I don't think of his work consciously as my evolution has gone, there's certainly a kindred spirit to that. But I can remember working with found materials and associations with them. Through the summer, I was interviewed for an oral history project that the Smithsonian Archive of America has. They got funding from the Keith Haring Foundation to do oral histories, particularly around the AIDS epidemic. And it's called the Smithsonian Archive of America's Visual Art and the AIDS Epidemic Oral Histories Project. It's going to be available online. I've yet to proofread my 500 pages of interview because was three interviews over the course of 12 hours by another really exceptional person, Ted Kerr, who was the man who interviewed me. But in the interview, his first question was, what was your earliest childhood memory? And after going and saying that I was wearing little red shorts, and it progressed into when I was about 1967, I remember that I had this little safe that I had built, which kind of like a little cave in the backyard beside the screen and porch in Pennsylvania. State College, Pennsylvania is where we lived at the time. And I would keep little treasures that I would collect in this safe. And there was a large towel that had a kind of abstract tiger print that I would wear as a cape. And I would go and make sure that my treasures were still there and move them around. It could be anything from, you know, my mother's high school ring to a tin soldier of my father's, and or an acorn or some more obscure object. So actually, when Ted Kerr the magic of that association came, I realized that my larger, more elaborate sculptures reference this little cave that I have of keeping treasures in there for safekeeping. When I look at these found objects, which can be in my studio, there are these little, even there, like works of art, these old cabinets that I have with drawers. You pull out a drawer and there's different arrays of things, from like things I find on the street to more precious discarded or salvaged jewelry. And I treat these materials equally and draw associations, you know, between them. And I began to realize that using these salvaged objects has this mirroring to my own course of HIV, as this evolution of often showing within myself and my own history, presenting these things that one might not have necessarily wanted as actually jewels and things that could be precious, and breathing new meaning into these salvaged materials can be very much like that perception. There's one piece actually that you showed, and what was the show that you did?
The Alana.
Yes. Right after you invited me to be part of that show, I found a book called, something like The Wonder Book of something. I can't remember the exact title, but of you know, magical places. And one of the spreads in the book that I turned to was Niagara Falls, different views of Niagara Falls in this antiquated book. And I remembered Fran Lebowitz's photograph of Niagara. So I liked very much that association to her photograph, and also to when I discovered the spread of Niagara Falls in this antiquated book, it called to Frederick Church's painting, Magnus painting of Niagara Falls. So, the piece that I call Niagara, it has a portal, almost like a proscenium, maybe a Japanese stage around it that I built out of wire structures, and it references some of the architectural elements of Alana. I have a old quilt that was actually in disrepair, and I would tear off pieces of this quilt that reference the some of the tile work in Alana that I have cascading down, and the strings that are frayed of the quilt mimic the motion of the water spilling down the falls. And there's bones that a friend gave me from scavenging the beach of fish that are within it. And there's a piece of wood from a tree that had been struck by lightning. And then on either side of the structure are these portals, and there's Suma ink brushes dangling down, referencing his paintings and wedding. They pass through wedding rings. And at the time, actually, the whole marriage equality was a big hot topic. So as I was putting these wedding bands within the structure, that came to mind. And I love when you're creating a piece and there's associations which you hadn't initially intended show up. And maybe one wouldn't automatically realize, but as I was making this piece, you're thinking about marriage and what that meant and marriage equality. And though I might have my own slant on what that topic brings up for me, it was certainly part of gay identity at the time. And the Niagara Falls, and the piece was not long after Spencer Cox died, and thinking about, you know, people who had committed suicide by going off through Niagara Falls, which I guess is the beauty of making art, right? And so looking at it is what associations come to mind. So even that actually was quite a healing piece for me to make. And then to have it here, presented at the Opera House in Hudson, when I grew up in the Hudson Valley. And, you know, Bruce, who has this gallery, when we first started working together, he said that he viewed me as a continuation of the Hudson River School, which is really quite a tender and emotional response, actually, when I heard that.
Now, you had a show a couple of years ago up at Andover, I think.
I did, yeah. The way the show in Andover came about is that I have a friend, Lewis Wiley, who's been very devoted to placing artwork, particularly by gay men and often men who are HIV positive, in various collections. And the Phillips Academy is associated with the Addison Gallery of American Art that's there. And he wanted to put together a collection in honor of the writer Paul Monnett, who was a classmate of his. And Paul died of AIDS complications, as well as his partner. And a way that he wanted to honor Paul was to put together this collection for an anniversary of their class. So it's actually called the Paul Monnett Collection. And work that Lewis acquired of mine is a group of six leaves. And there's the collection is also worked by Hunter Reynolds and Robert Mapplethorpe and a number of other people. So it's not only was an exhibition, but it's actually announcing that this collection for Paul Monnett exists. Now, when I'm placing work like that, I'm quite conscious about which individuals and leaves that I choose, so that it has a range of associations and responses. There's a tribute to Spencer Cox in that collection, in that grouping as well as a piece with the dancer Arnie Zane, who is with Bill T. Jones, who's a partner of Bill T. Jones, actually. And I believe Perry Ellis is also represented in that piece, and Cookie Mueller, who's an artist and actress.
Now, you say you had an uncle who was an early gay activist.
And my uncle Lige Clark, actually, he and his partner Jack Nichols were very active and informative gay rights activists. They helped start the first picket at the White House. I believe it was 1961. And then they went on to be really involved with the Mattachine Society. Actually, that came through the Mattachine Society. And then in their lives in New York, they founded and published the first national gay newspaper called Gay. And they wrote it when I was just hitting puberty. I discovered in my mother's cedar chest these two books that they wrote. One of them called Roommates Can Always Be Lovers. And the other one is I Have More Fun With You Than Anybody, which is actually the more known and really influenced my life, because it speaks not only of their activist life together, but also their relationship. And through that, because they were very expansive thinkers who thought that gay liberation would be the path for humans at large to be liberated, there's a lot of philosophies within that book that really resonated even when I first tested positive. I think a lot of my draw to spiritual and metaphysical ideas came through those early nighttime readings under my bed, as well as my uncle always carried a volume of Walt Whitman with him and could quote from it. He actually was killed when I was 13, and he was murdered in Mexico. As what now new information has come out, he was what we would call collateral damage, which seems is a very odd term. He was a companion of a man who was evidently delivering money to the Sandinistas, and they were ambushed near Dela Cruz at night because money was in the door of the Pinto that they were driving. I don't know if my voice dropped. But my uncle actually lived on East 7th Street, just off of 2nd Avenue. And I lived on first 14th Street between A and B, and then 14th and 2nd Avenue. So in my way of holding things, I genuinely believe that I was sent to the East Village to be in the same area as my Uncle Lige was when he lived there. We actually went to visit him in 1967, my mother and father and my sister Jamie and me. And I very much see the AIDS crisis and the things that have come through that as a continuation of the gay liberation movement and the evolution of where we've traveled. In a sense, you know, if I would ask myself, well, why am I so devoted to the subject of AIDS in my biography, I see a direct correlation between my uncle's activist nature and my own. And actually, a number of his friends are actually, who I know as growing up, are included in Leaves. He also calls to me in relationship to my inspiration of Appalachia and my mother's world and his world there. And the Appalachian Mountains have a really strong resonance to me, which isn't interesting companion to growing up here in the Hudson Valley.
So that was your mother's home turf?
Yeah, Hindman, Kentucky, not far from Hazard, which I think is a really nice, interesting way to perceive it. There's a family cemetery up on the hill, just outside of Hindman, that we still go to, where my Uncle Lige is buried, and my grandmother, Corinne Clark, who was also a very creative person.
I had a friend who got married in Berea, so I traveled down there once. It's very pretty country.
It's beautiful, Berea. Berea still has a fairly rich Appalachian and Kentucky craft movement there, kind of keeping alive the richness of Kentuckians can, especially the mountain people, can easily get this hillbilly kind of reference to them, which I think could be has its own attraction, And also is very marginalizing and limiting to a really quite rich people. One of my forefathers helped bring education to the area of Kentucky where my mother is from by seeking out missionaries that would come there to teach what he calls his greats and his grands. Actually, I've used references to the Appalachian dulcimer in some of my work by collecting fragments that dulcimer makers leave behind and incorporating them as homages to my Appalachian heritage. There's one piece that I call the Order, which is much, much larger than Niagara. It's about 4 by 6 feet. And there's dulcimer fragments in there to pay homage to Appalachia. But it's actually really very much of a cross-cultural piece because there's pieces from my travels. Actually, you mentioned that you had spent time in Thailand. As I have, so there's a little wooden carved kind of finial structure in the Order, and pieces of hardware like keyholes that I got in the flea markets outside of Paris. And the form of the Order is these 6 book covers that I had torn the contents of the pages out and opened the book covers. So then there are cast bronze leaves on some of the book covers, and the other covers are open spaces. So these leaves that were cast in bronze, reference the leaves, but also open up to other meanings and associations. Like my Uncle Lige and my grandmother Corinne would press flowers and butterflies and twigs in their books. It started out as a commission for a synagogue that was going to be used as a way of honoring donors to the synagogue. That's why the books came from. And the general form of it is based on a Torah. So there are, on either side of them are these things that reference a Torah scroll. I fairly quickly realized that this piece wanted to become something unto itself, but that reference was very significant because I was thinking about something that would represent a people and their history and who were often displaced and the trappings of things and memories that would be left behind or taken with them. I had it on my studio table for several years as its own installation that would continually evolve. And then when I was given this show at Pavel Zubok a couple of years ago, it was requested that I finish this piece, The Order. And I had friends come throughout the summer and help me, actually, which was very enlightening in many, many ways. For one, that I actually have this really quite generous creative community around me that's willing to come and participate. And their energies is actually included in this piece, having finished it early morning when it was to be picked up to take to the framer. There's actually, in the center of the piece, there's a crow feather. Crows in Native American thought are harbingers between this world and the other world. Can travel between.
This has certainly been fun and interesting.
Well, thank you. I've really appreciated it. I've enjoyed it, actually.
And I hope everyone will be able to see the show at VCB Art.
I think it's up through November 19th. It's a beautiful time for it to be here because of the fall and autumn leaves changing and different references to my work. So it's quite special to present particularly these photographs, which I actually have held back from showing for a significant occasion, and certainly my honoring my 30th anniversary of
seems like
HIV, which has influenced a lot of this, and it's a significant place to present it, having grown up here.
Thank you very much, Eric.
Thank you.